Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Mac Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Hello, hello. We are back once again for an adventure in history. Thanks for joining us.
I outed that your kids were sick last week.
I know. It was a holiday and and they were sick. It's like that time of year. We are in full Nutcracker mode, which is coming up. You can buy your tickets online, Little Ballet Theater, December 6th and 7th.
You know, I was never sick until I had kids.
Oh, it's just
they're like little germ carriers.
Germ fest. I'm like, don't kiss me, don't hug me, anything right now. Got to stay healthy.
That's right. So we had a couple of busy shows, and we didn't do a quick little recap, but Talking Tombstones happened.
Yes.
And the weather was nasty from Friday through like 11 o'clock.
This was
Sunday
that torrential
morning.
Downpour, yes. Lightning, thunder. Yes.
I have never checked the weather report so often, but then by noon it was beautiful.
Oh, I love it.
So we still had like 400 people show up. It was wonderful. And some great stories. And of course, our wonderful sponsor, Vancouver Granite Works. So another successful year, the 20th year we've done.
I love it.
And then we had the recipient, but then we actually had the award ceremony for the Selig Award from the Oregon Film Museum.
My favorite one of the year.
And Carmelo Cheristil was the third annual recipient. So we're really proud and really excited. And he's going to do a lot of good things. We watched his movie Geneva at the Liberty Theater. And then some of the other young adults.
Young adults.
I just, they're all kids to me because I feel old. But there are four or five of them from Outside the Frame, an organization in Portland that works with marginalized and at-risk youth and teaches them how to tell their story through film. Came and taught some film here.
I love that.
At how, the Heritage Museum.
Can you share any details? Like how many kids came? That's because it was local, middle school and high school.
Yeah, we only had a few, but they came up with this really great story. I saw the rough cut edit and Outside the Frame took it home with them to Portland and we'll clean it up. But it was basically a new employee at the Heritage Museum is locking up and apparently the Heritage Museum is haunted.
Oh, I love this.
And they got trapped down here in the, where we record, down here in the basement of the Heritage Museum.
Let's get these kids on our show.
It would be fun.
And then we'll also post a link to the video.
Well, we had two, because we had Monet as well on the radio show. Okay, well,
right. But I mean the local youth.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah. So huge success. So shall we get right to the history?
We will, because we have a guest.
You want to introduce? Yes.
Yeah, we have a guest, Michael Harvey, the mission manager at Providence Seaside Hospital, colleague. Thanks for coming and joining us.
Delighted. Yeah. Thanks for asking.
I love that title, mission manager.
I know.
It sounds very official.
It does.
He is very official.
All right, so let's whip through these history highlights so we can get onto this because it's going to be a much better show after I stop talking.
Okay, sounds good.
So these are things that happen tomorrow, November 24th. So the, as always, trivia or Thanksgiving's coming up. So maybe want some fun facts to talk about around the
did you know? Table. Ooh, and I know you have a good one here too.
Yeah, so 1869, the American Women's Suffrage Association forms in Cleveland.
Oh,
that caught me off guard.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I know where.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seneca Falls is the big convention, but I just assumed it was
Cleveland, Ohio. Okay. Good job, Cleveland.
Yeah. Way to go. And maybe they'll like build a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, too, and put some women in it. 1896, the first U.S. absentee voting law is enacted by Vermont.
Ooh.
Way to go, Vermont.
Yep, makes sense.
And my office was analyzing this earlier. Like, okay, is it just because it's rural? At first, my inkling was, it was snowing and they couldn't get there, but they wouldn't have known to create the absentee ballot ahead of time. But a rural area, and hey, I got things to do. I got maple trees to tap. Right. I got work to do. So
sound like you're an Oregon voter.
Yeah. Can I bring it in a week early and get on with my life? So Vermont,
and how early was that?
It was 1896.
So yeah.
Wow. So apparently, there's been
We've fine-tuned it by this point.
All kinds of problems with Vermont over 125 years now, I guess.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, 1896. 1974. Oh, wait, no, 18.
I was going to say, wow, we're jumping ahead.
1874. I got this out of order somehow. because I was going to make you guess on the Vermont thing.
Oh.
1874, American inventor Joseph Glidden patents barbed wire.
Oh.
Now, we've just talked about barbed wire, but right. not him. It was somebody that did something with his patent and made it better.
Okay, got it.
But barbed
wire.
This
is the patents. Okay.
Yeah, so this is the first time barbed wire is actually patented. 1947, Hollywood 10 is cited for contempt of Congress. The House of Representatives votes 346-17. That's kind of a landslide, to approve citations of contempt against 10 Hollywood writers, directors, and producers. Mm. These men had refused to cooperate at hearings dealing with communism in the movie industry held by the House Un-American Activities Committee. The Hollywood 10, as the men were known, are sentenced to 1 year in jail. The Supreme Court later upheld the contempt charges.
Wow.
I didn't remember that. I didn't remember that it made it to the Supreme Court. Yeah, yep. Well... Yeah. Another lesson learned.
That's right. Well, did we learn?
Did we learn? Yeah.
It is a good lesson to learn, though.
1963, Jack Ruby kills Lee Harvey Oswald.
But did he?
Did he? Well, he did. That one we've got on recording.
Yes, he did. Okay.
But I'm just a patsy. All right. 1971, hijacker and criminal mastermind D.B. Cooper parachutes out of a plane.
I love that one.
Never to be seen again.
We have to do some D.B. Cooper
I think we
podcasts.
Didn't we do, because when they were doing some kind of special a few years ago, Pete Roscoe was all into it because he had some clues. And I can't remember if we had him on to talk about that or just all my conversations.
He's fabulous. I mean, he's got a great story. And this is, you know, back before hijacking planes was really, you know, I mean, this was different.
Back when it was fun.
I know. Well,
is that what you're about to
say? No, entertaining or it wasn't deemed so... terrible, right?
It was unique.
It was unique. And and truly, you know, his purpose also was just to jump out of the plane himself.
Yes.
So. Yeah.
But he left his tie behind.
He did, but he took the money.
Took the money.
And his fake explosive device. All right, 1991, Freddie Mercury dies.
Oh, wow.
Queen,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. But our history holiday thing, I think, had the most impact on history. 1859, On the Origin of Species, is published by British naturalist Charles Darwin. Changes everybody's view. Evolution, huge debates, huge conversations. So I think had the most impact on history. 1859.
And even that seems kind of late,
Did I get it right?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we have a good, I mean, are you a background in theology?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Ooh. Yes.
Let's start there.
Yeah.
I mean, because I do love On the Origin of Species, because it does introduce something that obviously had to have crossed people's minds prior to that, right? That seems fairly late to me. Yet that really made a bold introduction to this thought process.
It's one of the only reasons I'd want to go see the Galapagos Islands.
Oh.
Because that's what influenced it. He saw these creatures that had obviously adapted or evolved to fit their environment.
To survive.
Yeah, I think there were a couple people that had the idea, but he just brings it all together, and the experience in the Galapagos really solidifies that for Darwin.
Wow.
But it took some time for that to catch on. I mean,
he got
lots of pushback from everybody, particularly the religious centers of the world.
That's why I think we kind of forget that he publishes this and he's not immediately everybody going, oh, you're right. And let's change all of our school books and everything
else.
Right.
He's called out on preposterous. This is ridiculous. And then the religious aspect. But even the scientific community didn't all just quickly jump on board.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. So speaking of theology, again, we have Michael Harvey here, mission manager of Providence Seaside Hospital. Did you know that we were going to have, that as your introduction today?
No, I didn't.
Well, on this day in history, you never know what's going to pop up.
Tomorrow in history.
Tomorrow in
history, okay.
So tell us a little bit about your origins. Okay. Let's start with where you grew up.
I grew up just up the road in Olympia, Washington.
Okay.
Not too far away. Yeah. Right on the Sound, right on the Puget Sound.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
So
it was a great childhood.
So growing up, what did you do? What were your interests?
Well, we had a small farm, so we really just engaged in everything that goes on with a small farm. All the animals, we milk cows. I mean, it sounds so silly today, you know, but we We grew up milking cows and getting up in the morning and getting the chicken eggs and that type of thing. Yeah. So it was a great childhood. I loved it. And basically our property was a kingdom, you know, in and of itself. And there were 10 children in my family. And so it was, we had a menagerie of children. Besides
the animals.
So yeah, I'm fascinated by that. So 10 children, what are the age ranges and where do you fall? What number are you?
I'm the first boy, second oldest. Okay. And then the youngest is, there was a little bit of a distance between the youngest and the rest of us, maybe I think it was 6 years or something like that.
Wow.
But mom was pretty, it was the last of the big Catholic families or, you know, Mormon families or that big kind of thinking about having big families. But they wanted a little farm. They wanted a big family. That's
And define little farm. What are we talking about? And who are you producing to sustain yourselves, or are you going to market or selling to
neighbors and self? Yeah, it was all a kind of a dream of my dad's. He started off with horses, and then as the family started growing, his father said, you got to get rid of the horses because they just eat hay.
Right.
You got to produce something, some beef, some whatever, you know. So he encouraged him, and then that kind of expanded. We always had a horse or two, but the property was maybe 15, 20 acres. It was not, you know, not huge. And there was some woodland in that and some space to even plow up and
sounds magical.
Produce, you know, a little bit of hay and the things we needed to keep the animals going.
Is the property still in your family at all? Or?
It is. My youngest brother bought it from my parents just before their passing. Yeah. And so he has it still there in Olympia. Yeah.
So you can visit it.
Yeah, I can visit it. Yeah.
Does he have animals still?
No, there's deer raccoon and everything else is
the
inhabited.
Forest animals.
The forest animals have inhabited.
I've never tried to milk a raccoon.
Yeah,
No.
Different
probably
type
not
of vision.
A good idea. Yeah.
So before we move on, then I got to ask, from a farming background, your favorite vegetable?
Oh my gosh, favorite vegetable, probably corn that's grown. We used to just go out and pick it the ears and eat it fresh.
Oh my gosh.
You know, we did the same with onions. You know, we had sweet onions and you'd eat those similar to the Walla Walla, you know, and you could just bite into an onion like an apple. They were so sweet. Yeah.
If you haven't tuned in yet, you realize I asked the stupid questions and Alana asked the real news professional-like questions.
Yeah, yeah.
So going through school, what are your interests? And at what point do you start to realize where your background or where you're going to head professionally?
I think... And I would say this is true for most of my brothers and sisters is we didn't have lots of money, but the one thing this will date me that my mom and dad said we had to have is an encyclopedia. Right. And again, we were a little bit rural, so we didn't have lots of neighbors. So we got to spend a lot of time doing that type of thing, looking up, you know, interesting things in the encyclopedia. For those who remember that.
Yes.
And
not a Wikipedia.
It was like your little farm expanded to the universe. And they were always encouraging us to study and to be curious. It was one of my values is curiosity, to be curious and to look at the world in multiple ways. My mother was a nurse, so science was very important to her, and dad was a historian. He taught history, so history was important to us. So yeah, that's kind of that's the formation, I guess. We came into that and went to small rural schools, and I did go to Catholic schools for a while in high school before it closed, but mostly went to the local schools.
So how small is small and rural?
In the grade school? Oh, I can't even remember how many kids, but there probably were not more than 20 kids in a class, you know, so it was small.
Pretty small. Yeah.
Yeah.
But quaint. And obviously then, I mean, that that learning or yearning to learn from history and science starting at such a young age. So when you're looking at graduating, what were you looking at doing next?
So mom was very, very curious about the world and loved that. But one of the things she was very interested in, mom and dad both very kind of staunch Catholics. They were kind of steeped in that. But my mother was kind of a rebel in that she studied Zen. And there were three of us in the family that kind of followed along in that Zen Buddhist tradition. Yeah. She never let go of Catholicism, but she practiced Zen. And that was a doorway for me. Zen was kind of a doorway for me into theology and philosophy. And then to study at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, which is where Buddhist, Hindu, Catholic, Protestant schools are all located. And at that time, you could go to any of those schools and study. And it was this very eclectic faith background.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tradition.
So talk a little bit about the differences between rural Puget Sound, Washington, and Berkeley.
It was quite a change. By the time I was studying at Berkeley, I studied at St. Martin's, which is a small Catholic college up in Olympia, and then transferred to Evergreen State College and ended up graduating from there.
Also a fantastic school.
It is a great
really
school.
Interesting. Yeah.
A great school. And then I just kind of worked some odd jobs for a while. And then at that time, I decided to, after a religious experience I had through the Zen channel, decided to become a Franciscan. And so I entered the Franciscans, and then from there went to graduate school at Berkeley.
So explain what that means, like, and what is involved in that process.
It's religious life. It's a very particular thing for Catholics, and Episcopalians have religious communities as well, but so do the Jewish communities have monastics, and also the Muslims have a monastic community. So it's not just a Christian mm-hmm. kind of thing or Catholic thing, but it was an interesting thing to do and decide to do. What I wanted to have the opportunity to do is to dive into theology and philosophy and the study of religion. And I felt I could do that in the context of this community. And the Franciscans really spoke to me because I just have a real connection to the poor and to people who are disenfranchised in any way. And justice is a big piece for me of that. But all that kind of came together while I was at Evergreen and also studying Zen. Just kind of flowered, and that's where I ended up.
So when you then join others at a university level and a higher education level, what are the conversations like? Were they eye-opening? Were people, because when we talk about religion, right, religion does cause wars. I mean, we understand right, that
true.
As a truth.
Yeah.
So here you are, educated adults, learning even more. What does that community look like?
Yeah, this is a huge question that you're asking. Obviously, it's not simple, but there are fundamental religious groups that dogmatically they're this kind of thing. They follow this tradition and this teacher, and then there's always in a religion a mystical sect, if you will. So for Buddhism, it's Zen. The Christian mystics might have been some of the individuals. But every tradition has, every religious tradition has that. I found in higher education that I was part of that there were a lot of people interested more in the mystical, more in the universal, more in the cosmic, as opposed to the structured, narrow kind of absolute that we often find at the root of religion. Mm-hmm. And I would say what the mystical traditions try to do is they try to veer back or move back to the founder. And when we go back to the founder of all the major religious traditions, what we find is something different than what now exists as the religious tradition.
Sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm always fascinated when I listen to Christians today in this country, listen to them justify certain kinds of political behavior when that had nothing to do with who they say they're following.
Right. It's There's the really history side too, right?
It's really quite fascinating, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. So I'm also fascinated by, because I'm in an element here that I'm not very as intelligent as I should be, as learned as I would like to be. You talk about Franciscans, and you were drawn to them because they are very interested in helping marginalized, and I assume trying to lessen that. So a lot of times I will meet somebody that's into philosophy or religious, and it was about self. Improving self, but mm-hmm. I'm hearing Franciscan maybe is more about helping others. So what, as you're going through this, what was your thinking of what you were going to be in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years?
So I would just say that the individuals I know that kind of enter a religious life or they have both things in mind. There's this, they want to understand who they really are. Right. They want to look deeply at who they are. And then they, I align myself in that striving to discover who I am with someone who I thought lived life in a particular way that really attracted me. And if we are really serious about St. Francis, who the Franciscans follow, most everybody knows St. Francis, you know, you got statues of them all over the city here in people's yards and bird baths. But fundamentally, he wanted to do what I was just talking about. He wanted to go back to the very basic understanding of what Jesus was all about, which is pretty, pretty in this day and age, pretty radical.
Right. Especially in the country that he was doing it in.
Right.
And yeah. the makeup of the people around him.
Right. And Francis did the same type of thing in Italy, in Assisi, and in Rome, and he challenged the powers that be in the religious traditions. And oftentimes they just get rid of fanatics like that, right? But in this case, they aligned themselves because the church realized it needed this kind of an influence to balance the kind of abusive power that was going on.
How do you use that historical documentation, as it be, in having conversations with people and saying, well, this was documented. I mean, the Bible is a historic document. It has been translated a lot. But we also have other religious documents as well. So there is some documentation that you could say, well, it was documented as this, even with the translations. I mean, how do you have those conversations? Or do you?
Yeah,
can we this day?
Yeah, it's like you guys are willing to have a conversation right now about this, right? Yeah. I'm all in. Let's talk about it. But I'm not interested in being in a debate with somebody about something that they have no interest in really thinking about. They just have a dogma. That's what they're gonna say they believe. They're just holding on to it.
It's
done. This is it. And there's no conversation.
My gosh, we should have had this as a three.
I know.
Because there's so many things I'm dying to.
We're going to have
to
them go back.
But I do want to give you a chance to talk about your mission and what you're doing now and make sure that you get a chance to talk about your current position.
And one of the organizations that you're involved with is Clatsop Community Action, our favorite local nonprofit social service agency that serves all of Clatsop County. And you do sit on their board of directors.
Yeah. So I came in COVID. So I really didn't even know anybody when I got here. I didn't know anybody's face, all those kind of things. And then we came as chaplain during that time to Providence, Seaside. And then a position came over for mission director, which is really taking the ideas, the philosophy, the theology of the Sisters of Providence and making sure that that continues on in the work we do. And in our values and in our mission, the poor and vulnerable is really, really, really important. And to make sure we're doing that and continue to do that. And then I think the second year I was here, I was asked if I wanted to be on CCA, and I didn't even know what it was. Again, just didn't know anybody when I came in. So I said, sure, why not? I need to be involved. And that was 3 years ago. And
I think I signed him up for that one.
I think you did. I think you did.
I didn't like the person that we had in there. I was like, we need to get well.
I think you did work your magic.
And then
now I'm the president of the board, and it's a great board, a great community, and Viviana Matthews is an amazing executive director for the community and really staunch in supporting the needs of the community.
What is a big project that CCA is working on right now?
Well, I think the focus really has been on and will be on, given the cutbacks from the federal government, on making sure that food security is intact. And that's a big, big job for us. And of course, housing. That's our new plan is to make sure people who want to be housed have that opportunity in some way.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting that. Who want to be housed?
Not everybody wants to, and that's okay. It's just that's
or is able to
or able to
at that point in their life.
We find a lot of people are restricted. If they restrict themselves, they just don't want to be off the street. But people who do, we want to give them an avenue to get housed and have some security.
I love that.
Including our veterans.
You know, another thing that I love too about Providence is if you want to talk to a chaplain, it's always presented to the person that they can meet with somebody who comes from exactly where their background is.
Right.
So that question exists, but also that they can also just meet with a chaplain and just talk.
Right.
They don't have to pray. They don't have to talk about their religious background or the chaplains either. And I feel like Providence has always done a good job too of having a diverse background of chaplains available who are all, despite their backgrounds, able to do that as well.
Absolutely, 100%. That's what chaplaincy teaches you. So it's great. My best conversations in chaplaincy have been with atheists and people that have some deep mental health issues. I mean, those are my best conversations.
Who still want and yearn for that connection.
They want connection. They don't want religion.
Yeah.
They want to know they're heard. They want to know that somebody's there.
I love that.
Well, you seem like the perfect person.
I know.
You guys are very kind.
I told you it was going to be a good guest.
Yeah. I do wish we could have.
I know.
More.
We're going to do a part two. That's okay. But thank you so much. I do appreciate everything that you're doing for Providence Seaside, but even more so for our community. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for listening. Go make some history, and we will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.